In this session, titled Understanding Managerial Maturity, Dr. Schleifer addresses the risks of improperly managed construction firms. A company's future does not rest solely on the performance of the labor, but depends greatly on the resources of the decision makers. Who finds the work? Who determines what jobs are suitable for the company? And are those jobs within the company's field of expertise? Delegating proper authority? Putting sub-management teams together? Who decides when it's the right time to make a drastic change within the organization? Management skills are perhaps one of the single most important ingredients in a contractor's formula for success. And now, let's join Dr. Schleifer.
Change in managerial maturity. The beauty of writing a book is that you then are given a poetic license. So I used my poetic license to make up the phrase managerial maturity because I had to describe something that was happening in some of the companies that we assisted in completing their work and perhaps helping them out of business, because most of them did not survive. 2%, by the way, of the companies in the database I'm talking about survived and are still in business. That's a horrible, horrible percentage. And it's a result of, if we lose our credit, it is almost impossible to get it back in the same name. It is really tough in today's day and age, once we've lost it, or filed Chapter 11, to recoup and be back in business using the same name or the same principles involved. It's happened, and you've probably heard stories about it, but very seldom. So there's a very small percentage of companies that survived. But this managerial maturity thing is one in which involves the fact, the reality, that each of us has our limitations. Now, I realize in the construction business, we don't usually buy that, right? I'm sitting next to a guy that does twice as much work as he. Guy's a donkey. I can do that much work. Right? I can. There's just no doubt in my mind. We each have our limitations. The problem is we have strengths and weaknesses. We can see our strengths. It's harder to see our weaknesses. This managerial maturity thing was typically outstripping the maturity of the ability to manage of the founder. What I did was watch companies, what we experienced rather, was see companies in our book of business, particularly first generation, that had done this curve that we talked about earlier, spent a lot of years, and we're out here 25 or 30 years in a generation. Somebody started the business, worked like heck, grew a little, and finally drove that startup company into a real, recognized and substantial business, and grew over time. The problem is, that this founder, often a one-man band, doesn't know his limits. In fact, it's very hard for any of us to know our limits. You actually see this particular cause after you pass it. The way to find out just how much you can deal with is to exceed it. That's pretty difficult and pretty dangerous. And what would happen is these companies would just grow and grow and grow until they fell apart. They just failed from lack of ability at the top. Now, the cure to that, of course, is to delegate. And herein lies our problem in the construction business, particularly the first generation business. People who found and drive companies to success are often people who do not like to delegate. There are actually some people who can't delegate. It's not within them. They want to do it all themselves. Some of you may have competed against that typical kind of contractor. I competed against a building contractor. Never forget this old Italian guy. He had grown, and people talked about it in history. He had grown to a certain size, and there was rumors that he didn't do too good. And then he came back, and he was a smaller contractor. But you didn't dare try to beat him near his hometown because you couldn't touch him. He stayed the same size year in and year out, and he just enjoyed that success. Because what he had done is he had climbed this volume curve, realized his limitations, didn't want anyone else telling him what to do, and he cut that right back to where it belonged and survived an earlier difficult period and just kept his business the same size. That is not common to see our company stay the same size. We typically want to grow. In fact, a lot of us need to grow in order to stimulate our people. They want to do bigger work. They need opportunities for promotion. The idea of growth is just built into a lot of our closely held companies. Accelerated growth which I define as anything over 15%. 15% plus inflation. That is to say, if you grow at the rate of inflation, you're not growing. Work and material and equipment just cost more, and you're doing projects that are slightly larger by the rate of inflation. Right now it's very low, but if it were 5 or 8%, then we'd have to grow at 5 or 8% to stay our same size. But 15%, through all of this database and really looking at it carefully, seems to be a rate of growth that the average closely held small and medium-sized construction organization can grow at without being different every year. In fact, I don't even recommend ever growing at percentages because they compound, right? If I'm doing $8 million a year and I want to grow, then I need to say something like, I'm going to try to plow on about 500,000, 750,000 additional volume every year and grow at that rate. And I get it up to 12 or 13 in a number of years, I might say, I want to put $1 million additional volume on a year and try to grow at that rate for a while. I'd much rather see us measure it in dollars than in percentages, because percentages compound. But for our purposes, about 15% plus inflation, companies seem to be able to grow. Closely held construction enterprises seem to be able to grow without changing themselves. Anything faster than that is possible. It's simply that the company isn't the same company 2 years later. 20% growth 2 years in a row is what? Compounded. Almost double? 45% bigger? A company 1.5 size bigger in only 24 months is not the company that it started out. It may be better. It may be great. I'm simply trying to say it isn't the same company. We start at that anything over this 15, and we've got to start looking at what it's going to do. We're going to have some dilution in key personnel. We're going to be pushing our managerial maturity. We're obviously going to be changing size or geography or type, because there isn't just a lot more of what we like to do around at that rate. We must be doing something else to grow, typically size of job. So we're probably at that growth rate bringing on some additional exposures. You'll notice that the growth is not one of the primary causes of business failure. Growth happened to be associated with most of these failures in the database, but it has never been called the primary cause. It's a byproduct of decisions that allowed growth to happen. Growth in and of itself was not the cause. Even successful profitable growth, by the way, eats cash. Let's remember that. But more important on the subject we're on now, and we should get back to that eats cash comment, it could outstrip one's managerial maturity. And if one were not a person who readily delegates, then we're just going to see when, how big it is that we can get that we can't handle it anymore. I like to think of the way we learn to run our businesses, particularly founders, as the way jugglers learn to do their craft or art. A juggler, someone wants to learn to juggle, takes three objects and starts throwing them up and down to see if they can juggle. And we do the same thing when we learn to run a business, particularly if we got it on a huge growth curve where we're just getting more and more work all the time. We're juggling more manpower, more equipment, more trucks, more projects to bid, more money. I mean, there's all kinds of action. We're in charge of everything. If we want to get better as a juggler, we then have to learn to do four. So we try juggling four. And if that works, we try five. Most learning jugglers can't reach over and pick up a fifth object. They're juggling so fast at four, they have to get someone to throw the fifth one in. Got to learn to catch that one and keep those five moving. If I'm really good, I'm going to try juggling six objects. Now, when I'm juggling five, I got too many men reporting to me. I got too much work. I'm handling too much money. I'm going to too many meetings. I'm trying to run more and more work over the years, and I've learned to do it. If when someone throws in a sixth object, because I want to take on more work, if I can't juggle six objects, what happens? They all fall. The juggler learning to do the next level when someone throws them in, if he can't get that to come in, he's got to start again because they all fall. That's what happens in managerial maturity. We end up, I've experienced these companies ending up just taking on such a workload that they couldn't manage it. Now, what happens is all of the decisions weaken. I've never measured the decisions, but a guy that's really busy running a one-man show that really doesn't delegate could have upwards of hundreds of decisions a week that have to be made, from minor to serious. And now he doubles the size. Now he's got thousands of decisions. He doesn't make the limit. He can make 172 decisions really well. When he exceeds that, he doesn't make 172 really well and then a few bad ones. They all weaken because nothing gets his full attention. And the answer, of course, is to delegate. I've said earlier, Some of our founders are not good delegators, and some actually can't do it. What you need to know under this heading is the definition of true delegation. Whether you're in this room and you should be delegating to someone else, or you're the person that should be delegating to you, the true definition of delegation is that the person delegated to is allowed to make mistakes. The definition of true and actual delegation of authority is that the person delegated to is allowed to make mistakes. And I hear a lot of people trying to train people and saying, I'm not going to let that make mistake. I talk to contractors and say, oh, I'm going to teach my son and daughter how to run this business, but I'm not going to lose money at it. So what do? They set them up in positions of authority. This happens particularly in family businesses, but it can happen in non-family businesses. And I hope I don't hit too close to home, because we're closely held companies in here, but we got to discuss it. That's why I call it managerial maturity. A person who is truly a mature manager knows enough to train his replacement and truly delegates for that replacement. But these contractors that tell me I'm not going to lose money at it, what they do is they set their the people they're going to train, whether they're their sons and daughters or just strangers, or, you know, non-relatives, they set them up in these positions of authority, but then they watch them real closely. And if they're about to make a mistake, they tell them about it. Then they don't make the mistake. The problem with that is it becomes very obvious to the person who's being watched very closely that they're never going to make a mistake. Why even make a decision? It would be easier to just go to Dad and ask him, but he doesn't want that. So we learn something else. We end up running decisions up the flagpole. Right? We're going out to lunch with Dad, and I said, I'm thinking about doing so-and-so. You're what? Nah, just thinking about it. I probably won't. Right? That's the wrong decision. Driving to a job, you pull the same thing. You know, you run it by him, see what he's thinking. Typically in those offices, I've noticed that a lot of times Dad, when he looks out his door from his office, from his place at his desk, he can see almost everything going on. Now, it's coincidence that that office is that way, but there's often the desk and the door seem to just line up so we know where everybody. So I suggest to people that aren't being delegated to, and I try to make light of it, but I think we need to understand this point, that what they ought to do is get some duct tape. They have to make a decision. It's got to be decision A, B, or C. One of them's correct, and I'm not sure which one. I suggest you take some duct tape, put it down on the carpet out in your office, because he can see right in there. See if we come to work on time, right? We're working hard, that kind of thing. And I'm going to mark those decisions, and I'm going to walk up near decision A, not make it, just get near it, and I'm going to look into Dad's office. And if he's getting nervous and he doesn't like it, it's not decision A. Then I'm going to get back over here, and I'm going to walk up towards sachet up next as decision B. Almost make it, check Dad, and it's not decision B, right? He's nervous. I can see that. That's a really bad one. So then I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to make decision C, and Dad says, that's my boy, he knows what he's doing. I didn't make decision C. I eliminated the other processes. And what happens, one of the serious failure rates at succession in our business, is people end up taking over companies that they didn't get to practice at. That they didn't get to actually be delegated enough authority to truly do their job, let alone run the whole organization. So then when it happens, it's overwhelming. When I do this to strictly owners, this particular seminar to strictly owners of companies, I challenge them not to push people into the construction business that may not want to be in it. There's a macho effect there. A lot of our founders want their youngsters in the business, at least the oldest son. God forbid he wants to take dancing lessons, right? No, we got no time, because you're interested in those kind of things. You need to be right here working summers and everything else. And then we end up later in years with people running construction companies that never even wanted to be in the business, let alone run the business. But they do it because they're supposed to. And we find that they're very prone to this by absenteeism or just ability, because it isn't their first choice of a career. Particularly dangerous in our business. Secondly, if we refuse to delegate, I challenge contractors, when I do this to just owners of businesses, to not let it happen, because it's inherently unfair. I'm running this business myself and not delegating to anyone. I'm juggling 7-8 balls. I got more stuff in the air, right? I'm taking on such a load that it's got me stooped over. Every time I take on more responsibility, I'm bent over. I finally get to be 75 years old and I quit the business and I take this load that I can hardly handle. It's the biggest the company's ever been, and I give it to somebody I love. No wonder we have the failure rate. I never gave them the authority in the delegation to learn the business. I didn't have enough managerial maturity to see that there was at least a good chance of success. And then when it's the biggest that ever was, and I'm too old to deal with it, I give it to somebody who's apt to fail or has a statistically equal chance of winning. This really hurts construction contractors when I tell them that the ability to run a construction company successfully is not inherited. That really hurts. Right? I watch my audiences. Some of them, when they get the knife out, they may listen or they may leave, but it's not. It's not automatic. I have contractors tell me he or she grew up with construction around the table. I've been taking them to the job in a pickup truck since they were that big. They eat and sleep construction. They know this business. Having construction talked about around the table is something I hear a lot. Anybody in a family business here ever have a business meeting instead of Thanksgiving dinner? Right? Thanksgiving's good because we got everybody together. Now we can really talk about some business things. I suggest that having construction around the table does nothing but give you bad table manners. I see a lot of contractors that point with a fork, particularly founders, and that's inappropriate, and that's because they're doing business at the dinner table. We need, under the heading of managerial maturity, to watch our succession process. We need to allow people to learn to run our businesses, and if in Bill's firm where they're going too deep in management, they've already learned it. They're letting more than one person make decisions in order to train people coming through. If it's happening in your company, look for it, watch out for it. It is lethal, and we don't need it. The failure rate in our industry has actually gone down for 2 years in a row. That is really good news, because it was soaring. It just was getting worse and worse and worse all through the early 90s. It's finally tapered off and gone down 2 years in a row, and we really need to manage that process down. A big part of it would be addressing managerial maturity.